I'm going to try to go through the rest of 49 as fast as I can. I hope to be able to finish the entire chapter today. It's difficult because I have written more about this chapter in Genesis other than chapter 2, 3, and 4 of Genesis. I got a lot more writing on them. This is the second largest writing that I have. I've done a lot of research on it, and so I'm just going to do the very best I can to make it as short as possible. So be patient with me. We're going to begin in verse 13 because we already read the first 12 verses. So verse 13 to the end of the chapter.
Zebulun shall dwell at the shore of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall be in Sidon. Issachar is a strong donkey crouching between the sheepfolds. He saw that a resting place was good, and that the land was pleasant, so he bowed his shoulder to bear, and became a servant at forced labor. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls backward. I wait for your salvation, O Lord. Raiders shall raid God, but he shall raid at their heels. Asher's foot shall be rich, and he shall yield royal delicacies. Naphtali is a doe let loose that bears beautiful fawns. Yosef is a fruitful bough by a spring. His branches run over the wall. The archers bitterly attacked him, shot at him, and harassed him severely. Yet his bow remained unmoved. His arms were made agile by the hands of the mighty one of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father, who will help you, by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings from heaven above, the blessings of the deep that crouches beneath, blessings from the breast and of the womb. The blessings of your father are mighty beyond the blessings of my parents, up to the bounties of the everlasting hills. May they be on the head of Yosef and on the brow of him who is set apart from his brothers. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf in the morning, devouring the prey, and at evening dividing the spoils. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. This is what their father said to them as he blessed them, blessing each with a blessing suitable to him. Then he commanded them, said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, to the east of Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought in with the field from Ephron the Hittite to possess as a burying place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Yitzhak and Rivka, his wife. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is in it were bought from the Hittites. When Jacob finished commanding his sons, he drew up his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people.
The term latter days, because the Christian world has a vision of the latter days associated with the coming of the Messiah, the destruction of Babylon, and the kingdom of God on this earth. They have a connection when they read the 49th chapter, which is talking about the latter days or the end days. They associate it and try to put each one of those tribes as come to a nation and make them be around or exist at the, quote, time of the end. right? And I tried to get something across last week, and I want to make myself a little clearer. First of all, Richard Agee has a dilemma. My dilemma is this. When I read the 49th chapter of Genesis, I see Jacob only addressing the 12 tribes. Period. Nowhere in his statement does he talk about the four beasts in the book of Daniel. Nowhere does he talk about the coming of the Messiah the first time or coming the Messiah the second time. Nowhere does he talk about Matthew 24 of the Great Tribulation. Nor does he talk about some beast that will come up out of the river or out of the mountains or out of the land or out of the grave. He's only addressing the end days of each one of these tribes. Now, when you go into the actual prophets, we'll go through a few of them today so you understand what I'm saying. It's amazing that even in the book of Deuteronomy, when he talks about the last days, it's different, completely different in wording in Hebrew than it is in the 49th chapter. So I have a dilemma. And my wife talked to me last Sunday, I guess it was. And I have two big dilemmas, by the honest truth. The quote, end time, and then the end time. I have a dilemma about the end time in relationship to what Jacob said. I also have a dilemma about the end time of what the Messiah said and what the prophets say. I don't have a great understanding of the end of time. I don't understand. I've heard schedules, I've heard predictions, I've heard all sorts of theories and concepts and ideas, and they sound interesting. They sound logical. The latest one, I think, is he's going to come in 2016. That's the latest rumor of him coming. As the later is 2016, which is, you know, a couple of years away. I cannot visualize that because I don't believe God has given me that to see. Let me tell you something about this dilemma I have. There are several things that through the years I have had a hard time, but I never spoke out about it. And for some reason, this time, I find it important not to convince you that I see something you don't see, but to tell you of my dilemma. Now, everybody, probably in this room, when they read the 49th chapter, they see visions, they see ideas, they see the production, they see the Messiah, they see the resurrection, they see everything, and all the way to the final end when the new heaven and new earth. I don't. Because I don't see it that way. Now, it doesn't mean I don't see something. I try to ask God something. This is my prayer I ask to God. I'm going to share this with you because this is so you know exactly in my mind. Elohim, what is it that you are showing me? You are seen through the things you have created. You told Abraham to look up and to count the stars. You have said the stars are speaking, but not with a language. You have told us through Moses and your son what we are to live by every word that comes from your mouth. I am at a loss. Is it because, this is what I ask God, is because I want to see something else in the 49th chapter. Is it because I want to have a different answer than what is written? Last week, I came to understand I do want an answer. I had to be very careful now. I'm looking at this thing and I says, okay, what is the answer? Now, so that's my dilemma. So, you don't have to follow through, so I think I'll go through this section relatively quick and fast, because that's my dilemma and not yours, right? So, we're going to talk about what is written, period. That's it. I'm not going to tell you that this is about the end of the world, the end of history, the end of mankind, and the return of the Messiah, or anything, because I don't see this in the 49th chapter. Myself, I cannot put something there about the great Babylon of Revelations. It doesn't fit. I can't put the great war that's God going to do with the foreign bowls down. It's not there. Okay? So I asked myself, okay, what is it that Jacob was saying, and what is it that I need to understand? So now we're in Zebulun, 13th chapter, 13th verse. Zebulun. Now in your English, King James, he dwells in a haven. What is a haven? It's a what? Actually, in Hebrew, it's basically a covering. Covering into a place where you're surrounded by like a waterway, a water, like a docking place, a place where you dock. And the enemy can't get to you. Okay? And he says now, and he, now we're talking about the end of days. Now we're not talking about the end of time. We're talking about the end of the time of, or what's going to occur to Zebulun at a point in time in Zebulun's, not Judah's, not Reuben's, not Daniel's, Dan, but in Zebulun's time. When does Zebulun's end? Or what is it? What changes with him? What came about with him? Now we know that history doesn't have him being by the sea. I say, it's okay, so there's something wrong here. Well, not necessarily. Well, I'm looking here and I'm saying, and he is a haven for ships. Where is he at? Yes, Daniel.
Well, I guess part of it depends on when Jacob's saying in the latter days, end times for you, which end time he's talking about.
That's the point,
there's so
my
many
son.
Of them.
That's the point. And so, what I'm trying to say here is the book of 49th chapter is not about the end of the mankind, but of the tribes, each and every one of them. What is the concluding matter? What's going to happen to them? Now he says it's a blessing. Answer. How was this a blessing to Zebulun?
Well, I don't think I can answer that question because I don't know what ever happened to them other than the fact that once Assyria came, they were done. Or was it Babylon? Or one of the other, whichever one, I forget which one took them. Took them, that was their end day. So whatever their deal was, whatever accomplishment had to be, it had to occur at a time between Jacob shows up and says this all the way until they're carried away in the captivity and disappear.
Okay, I can understand that. Keep that in mind. Because I don't think that's what he was talking about. But keep that in mind. Ellie.
You asked, how could this be a blessing? And some of these things don't sound too good. But can it be that at the end of whatever time he's talking about, that these people's identities are revealed to them? Because if a person knows who they are, that's a blessing.
Possible. We talked about that last Sunday. That's a possibility. I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it isn't. But I'm looking here. Now, this particular tribe is a haven for other ships. What other ships? Yes.
Other nations' ships or other people's?
What specifically is there? His border will be unto, where is that? Actually, it's from what we call the Gaza, all the way up to Lebanon. History went through and it controlled it all. They are the Phoenicians, you might well call them that, but not really. They are Canaanites. This is the firstborn son of Canaan. Now, he is there protecting, becoming a cove for other ships, not just his. That's really odd, don't you think? Don't know if you have an answer for that. The word Zidon means one who is a hunter or one who hunts. That's all that word means. Basically, in fishing. Become a fisherman, hunting for fish. The simplicity of that terminology. And it goes all the way up to the Tyre. Remember Tyre? Way up north. Now, next was really odd. Issachar.
Hey, Richard.
Yes.
Before we go on, do you give any credence to the somewhat popular concept that Zebulun is Netherlands, Dutch people?
I will talk about that. Okay, but I have to finish my little thing here first.
Okay.
It's very, very important that I go through these things, and then we'll come back and see if they really are. All right? See if they really are what one thinks they are. Now, Issachar. He's this old English here, strong donkey. You know what the word strong means? It's not what you think. It basically means strong-boned. A strong-boned donkey. The bones are strong. Now, this is very interesting thing because Jeff read it correctly about this one, and most of your English will not get it. And it says crouching down, that is to go down, between two, and some of your translations has burdens. It isn't burdens, it's stalls. Two stalls. When you have a cow and you want to milk it, you put it between two stalls so it doesn't move. It's trapped between the stalls. Here this strong donkey is trapped between two stalls. Whether it's, quote, cattle stalls or, quote, sheep stalls or donkey stalls or horse stalls, he's in between. And that's what that burden means. It doesn't mean he's got something on his shoulder. He's now in between these two. He can't move left or right. Now let's continue on with this. I don't think I'm going to finish today. God help me. And he says that he saw what's called rest. What is a rest? What does that mean in your English? This does not mean the word, you know, a resting place. It's not Noah. They're not there. It's not a place of take a nap. It's called a place of what? It's found to be a very resting place, a place that's peaceful. Now, he's caught in between the two stalls. As Zebulun says, I'm at peace here. Now, either he's trapped in the two stalls, or God has put him in the two stalls in order to protect him. Take it one way or the other. The next statement is very strange. He says, pleasant. What does the word pleasant mean? It's to be beautiful. It's to be sweet. It's to be delightful. It's a pleasant place and it's delightful. It's a place I can actually rest and be at peace, and it's a wonderful place to be. Right? And then this really odd thing what he brought out of the word servant. Now, servant means what? He read it. Remember what he said? A slave. Now the next word is tribute. Now, tribute has a very unique terminology, and that tribute is meaning literally, that's the word for a burden that is heavy. It's either by you are forced worker. Now, this place of tribute is translated into several different ways. One is also taxation. But you remember when Israel took over the promised land, and a guy named Joshua made a deal and found out, he was tricked. You know what they said about, what did they do to the ones that they tricked him with? They had to pay tribute to Israel. That tribute wasn't money. That tribute was forced labor. They became slaves in that literal sense. And this sense here now, Issachar. Today I have a hard time picturing a country that is that way. Myself, personally, as Richard Agee is talking. Not anybody else. So let's go on to the next one. So I'm going to run this thing as fast as I can. Then comes this guy named Dan. Really hard to understand him, right? What is Dan? Judge. Okay. What's interesting, it says, in a literary, the judge shall judge. Well, that's a really interesting word. What does judge mean in Hebrew? He will be judging as one of the tribes of the world. No, of Israel. So he's the main number one guy who judges. And the word judge here basically means to judge in the sense of to be firm, to be strong, to be Lord, to be master. But the judge is supposed to do something. The judge could do two things, right? He could judge against you, or he could judge for you against somebody else. Right? Listen to the phraseology here. The next statement says he will be a serpent? What does a serpent do? On the way. He's going to be the serpent that's in the way. He's going to stop. He's going to block something. What's he going to block? He's like an adder. Very poisonous one, a snapping one. He's going to block the way of the path, and he's going to do something. What's he going to do? It says, bite the horse's heels. What on earth does that mean? What nation today, quote, represents the tribe of Dan that bites and somebody dies? When the rider goes backwards, he's dead. He's not alive. What about the horse? What is a horse picture? How many times have you heard it from my son? War. War. Oh. Dan is involved with war. And that word bite is also used in Hebrew when it says usury. We have that word bite. But biblically speaking, more and more, it really means a bite. A deadly one. And even the eternal creator of heaven and earth, or Yahweh, had been called the one who overthrows the rider. You remember that song we have? We sing it every single time. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto Yahuwah, and saying, I will sing unto Yahuwah, for he has triumphed gloriously. He took the horse and his rider and put it in slim pulling. He killed him. Now, when you bite the horse, which is the power, the strength, and the horse, the rider goes backwards. Do you think the horse is going to survive? No, this is an adder. It's a poisonous one. The horse also dies. Listen to this. We go into Jeremiah, don't have to go there, 20:51. And he says there, that this is the Yahuwah saying, And with thee I will break in pieces the horse and his rider, the chariot and his rider. That means destruction. So go back to Daniel for a moment. Very interesting next statement. Do you see the next statement that says? What on earth is Jacob saying about Dan? Is it Dan that's waiting to be saved, or Jacob's waiting for Dan to be saved and have salvation? Or is it Dan who is waiting for thy salvation? Not for Dan, because Dan is the judge of Israel. You see the picture? This is not a bad promise. This is the blessing. Basically, it's the blessing of what judges will be doing. Salvation means to also deliver from something. When you are at war, he bites the heel, and the rider goes backwards, he's dead. They were delivered. Quote, they got salvation from the rider and the horse. You understand what I'm saying? So, we try to make a negative of the past. That's really hard for me to do that. Really hard for me to do that. That's just me. Doesn't matter. Now, Gad, fascinating. 19th chapter, 19th verse. Gad. Now, we know the Gad means troop, right? Now, it's funny about this thing because it talks about this. But it doesn't say Gad, a troop. It says, a troop shall overcome him. What does that mean? He's going to be attacked. Literally in Hebrew, he's going to be invaded. He's going to be attacked. Let's say, surprisingly, or unaware, it was a sneak attack. Must be the United States of America, right? Sneak attack. And we fought back, and it says he fights back and he wins. Oh, we must have won. Right? Is that what it's all about? Or what is it telling us? It's funny that Dan, I wait for your deliverance. And here Gad gets attacked, and Gad fights back and wins. Odd combination, don't you think? The judge of Israel waits, and Gad gets attacked. Interesting, don't you think? What country do you know of? Quote, in the end time, is Gad, who's basically a military operation, because that's what Gad means, right? Now, what's so funny about this, Gad becomes stronger at the end. He defeated his enemy. Now, what I ask you, remember, these are about the end of days, referring to each and every one of the tribes of Israel, not of Europe, Russia, Africa, South America, North America, China. I mean, it's about Israel. Right? We have learned that this is referring to, and what does Israel mean? You forgot. Rules with God, or in a sense, rules like God rules. So the sons of Israel are going to go through a period of time. I don't know when. I don't know how long. This doesn't tell me the end of time. Doesn't talk about revelations. Doesn't talk about the 24th chapter of Matthew. It doesn't talk about the book of Daniel and the four beasts. Doesn't talk about that. Well, it talks about the tribe. What is the concluding matter, in a sense? What is going to take place? And they're called blessings. It's really hard for us to say that, right? Now, where are we at? We've gone to Asher. Oh, this is a funny one. Now, talk back. You know, I was taught many years ago that Asher, because this guy up there at the podium loved certain kind of food. And so his interpretation was his bread, which means rich and fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. That royal means the kingly delights. And since he liked Danish pastry, he must have said, it's gotta be Holland. No other country could do a better job than that. It's a funny, comical thing, but he loved pastry. He loved the Danish pastry. He just, oh, that's it. That's it. I mean, the Holland's pastry. I said, that's weird.
It's Belgian chocolate.
That's funny, but that's how you can interpret it that way. Wow, it's very pleasant. Looks like nothing's going to happen to Holland. They're going to be blessed forever because they're going to give wonderful food to the king. The Messiah, you know, the King of Kings, and go give really good Danish, Dutch chocolate. That's funny. But, you know, that's how people are. I meant chocolate. I didn't mean Danish food, but the chocolate food. Anyway, let's go on. Then this Naphtali. Okay. What is Naphtali? It's fascinating to read it in Hebrew. What he says. Because I know this. I am not a Naphtalite. Listen to what it says. A hind let loose. He sets free. Free from what? Bondage? Well, no, right. He gives something. Did you notice what he gives? Goodly what? Ah. You know what that means? Learning Hebrew means pleasant words, saying pleasant things, and never speaking badly. So it's a word of hope. Love this Devlin, that's the one that comes up, and if you are depressed, he gives you wonderful and good and uplifting and inspiring, helpful words to get you out of your slump. What nation on the face of earth fits that role? You see my dilemma? It doesn't fit. But it does fit with them. It does fit with them. Because this is not about a nation. This is about the tribes of Israel. I got a little time left. That's great. So I'm going through this thing extremely fast. Be with me. Ooh, 22, chapter, verse 22. I can't slow down this one. Now, everybody wants to be related to Joseph. They want to be either an Ephraimite, preferably. Well, except being a Manassite. But I really want to be an Ephraimite. Ephraimite's not mentioned here. Neither is Manasseh. Who's mentioned here?
Joseph.
Now, let's ask yourself a question. Joseph, it's worded twice here in Hebrew. Joseph, a fruitful son. A fruitful son by an eye whose daughters run over the wall. Literally what it says. That's odd. What, the daughters running away? That's actually the Hebrew word for daughters. It doesn't mean physical daughters. It means the bountifulness of the womb, okay, carries the child. And it's going to be over the wall. It's going to be past the boundary lines or past the territorial, quote, in a quote, boundary lines. That's an interpretation. We know that the word son, or it says broth, or bog, would you have? Anyway, that word means son. He's a fruitful son. And basically, that's the same meaning of to build, to rebuild, to establish, to come, and to continue. That's what that word son means. does not mean by sex, by birth. And the word also for daughter is identical to it. It's just a feminine terminology of the very same meaning of the word. And then this thing called the eye. It says by the well. And it says here, it's by the eye. What's an eye? It does relate to the word well. There's also an eye of the horizon. There's an eye of the well, and there's an eye that's in your eyeball. An opening. And something comes out, or is seen what's inside of it. You remember the woman who had, she was kicked out of the, quote, house of Abraham, end of quote, and she had a son who was dying. You remember that one? Remember his name? Ishmael. Okay, good. You got good memory. And then lo and behold, says that she was by the eye of the well, of the eye of the spring. So, and she didn't see it. But, of course, later on we know that took place. Now, this is very funny. Just real quick here. I'm trying to run this thing as fast as I can. Verse 23. And some of your translations calls the archers. Now that really means, breaking it down, made up of two words, by the way, in Hebrew. Archer means, it break it up of a Lord or master of Baal. Baal, have you heard Baal? Baal, Baal. Means master or Lord. And he has arrows. The Baal has arrows. What did he do with the arrows? It says, sore they grieved him. That's a horrible translation. Grieved? What do you think grieved? That doesn't fit, right? Showed bitterness, resentment, angry. Hostility. The reason why the Baal has got an arrow and shooting, because he is bitter, angry, and hostile toward, and the word hate comes next, hostile and toward Joseph. Right? Now the next statement is real quick, verse 24. But his bow abides in strength. Basically, another word for, and his bowmen, his archmen, they are what? It says strength, perpetually stronger and ever going. You can't stop the bowmen of Joseph. He is stronger, mightier, and he defeats. You attack him, he's going to wipe you out. That's basically what this statement is all about. And it says, the strength, which means that which just keeps on flowing, going out, doesn't mean strong, it means the strength, something continually going on. And the arms, that weird, interesting word, arms, means the shoulder or the forearm and his hand are made, now that word strong, by whom? The plurality, hands of, and it says mighty. That refers to always the mighty one of Israel. Now, is Joseph in the losing end? Who can fight against Joseph? And win. Very powerful, right? Very mighty. Very strong. And he says, that word strong means very flexible. He can move quickly. He can move fast and he can move suddenly. Is that a nation you're aware of? Oh, we say, oh, of course it is. It's the United States of America, because no one can fight against us. What's that? We move fast, we move quick. Really? We're taking forever in the last two wars to get anywhere. We've not done very good, have we? We're still not doing very good. But anyway, you could put that together. But the last part, I want to go down to verse 26. In the very last section of the verse 26, I think very fascinating. This is where Jacob is saying, okay, blessed, or the prosperity, basically, of thy father have prevailed, or have strengthened, have given you strength above the blessings of the other ones, your son, your brothers, to the uttermost bound of everlasting hills. Blessing means it's going to last forever. Sounds like it, doesn't it? And then he says something else. They, meaning the blessings, shall be on the head of Joseph, on the crown of the head of him that was separated. What's that word in Hebrew? Huh? Which means? So that's like a Nazarite vow. The separated one, the sacred one, the one that is sanctified and set apart to do. Ah! He's going to be, not, he's taking the Nazarite vow, he's the one that is a Nazarite in the true sense. Joseph? Joseph? That doesn't make sense, right? I thought somebody else was supposed to be devoted. Devoted one. That's basically what that Hebrew word means, the devoted one. And then, hey, I'm going to do okay. Benjamin. Now, that's odd, don't you think? What is Benjamin? He's what kind of a wolf? A ravaging one. And what does he do? In the morning, what does he do? Devour the prey or the booty. And at night he shall devour the prey, the beauty or the spoil. Well, that's really devour it. He's going to separate it. He's going to divide it. What does a wolf really do? When a wolf comes into a pack of, let's say, sheep, what do the sheep do? Oh, that's a wolf. No, they run. But he gets it. Wolves are very good and very strong and very mighty. He's not the only one that can do this, by the way. We'll go through some of that. Very few of it, in fact. And when you look at the wolf, the raging wolf, or that word raging, it's also connected to a lion. Right? The raging lion. I forgot to write this down. It says the Yahuwah is a raging lion. Oh. So there's a reality here between Benjamin connected to Creator of the Earth is a raging wolf. What will God do when he's finally finishing his task? What's he going to do? Divide the spoil. Right? I'm not saying that's what this is all about. I'm just saying I'd like now for you to get back to what John was saying. See, I have heard that the Benjamites are Norwegians, or the Scandinavian people. I heard they are somebody, somewhere. What country on the face of this earth pictures or represents a someone or a group of people that go in and cause damage and fear and fright and spoil or take back with them booty? What nation? What did you find? I tell you one thing. You want to know? I don't know. But put yourself, Al-Qaeda, raging wolf. Going in, destroy, come back. Going in, destroy, come back. Maybe they're Benjamites. Because maybe it's not a nation, maybe it's a people. Oh, you can't be telling me that it's, oh, these Muslims, right? Well, I don't know. We're not asking that question about nations. So we talk about nations. And each one of us like to be one of the nations, and most of us would like to be the nation of at least Joseph. The most blessed one of the bunch. The one that's been set aside. The one that has been sanctified by God. That's what we want to be, right? Is that what this is all about? It's not about us. It's about the house of Israel. And what's going to take place. And of course, we went on and he blessed everyone else. And I know some of your English, we'll go down to verse 33 real quickly, because some of you have this in English, is that Jacob yielded up the ghost. Horrible, horrible, 100% horrible translation. Jeff read it correctly. Gave up his last breath. That's what it really should be. That word in Hebrew really means to expire, to die, to be dead. So sometimes you have that word of ghost. It has to do with, the Christianity concept of the Holy Ghost. Forget it. It's not no relation to it whatsoever. He gave up his breath. Any questions? Oh man, I'm surprised I got this far. And it's even, I got plenty of time left over. So that was my dilemma.
Yes. I will say something. I don't know when you went over this, but combining Genesis 49 with Deuteronomy 33.
It's different.
We get fill in though. I mean, if you to go back to the Belgians and Asher again, in Deuteronomy 33 it says Asher's feet shall stand in oil. Now, if your man lived in Belgium for many years, I've been through the place right. 3 or 4 times myself, and nobody eats Richard food in the Belgians. Okay. Not alone the sweet stuff, but okay. Also they fry up everything. They eat very, very rich. Everything is done in butter. And very, very rich. So they surely have that attribute. Now, Zebulun in Deuteronomy 33, it says that he shall, I'd have to go look it up, take possession of the seas, push back the sea. So these indications are there in, spread between those two groups of scriptures.
My point for you to understand what I'm saying. Okay. I'm not looking at, listen what I'm saying. I'm not looking what God told Moses to say to the 12. I'm looking at what God said to a man named Jacob. I can't go on until I understand why Israel had to say these things, which doesn't seem to fit anywhere else in the entire Bible. You can't relate that statement to what Moses said. They don't connect. Tremendous amount of blessings comes from Moses' words. Do you remember what happened to Simeon? And what happened to Levi? Now, let's read this because it's very fascinating. Let's go back just a little bit on that one because it's hard to understand this. I had to be corrected last week about it, and I'm glad I was, but I want to talk about it now. Verse 5. Simeon and Levi, brothers, and it says, instruments of cruelty, their habitation. A horrible translation. Doesn't even come close to that. It should read, Simeon and Levi, instruments of cruelty in their weapons, their swords, and their devices. Not where they live. Because they were supposed to be living where? You're going to be scattered. Because my soul, verse 6, cannot tolerate you. Therefore, I'm going to do this to you, Simeon and Levi. I'm going to put you in all the other tribes. Because I cannot tolerate. And they will have to, quote, control your cruelty, your meanness, your hostility, your wrath. Now, we say, well, we know Levites are. They're with the Jews, right? Okay, hunky-dory, they're with the Jews. Mike, he said, all of Israel. Where are the Simeonites? Maybe they're the mafia. Maybe they're gang members. Maybe they're the police. See, we don't have an answer for all those things, because some people would look at the police officer as being cream, rotten, underhanded, and sneaky. Hey, what about politicians? I mean, you could name Simeon all over the place, can't you? But Levi, oh no, he's with the Jews. Really? That's not what it says. Now, what nation does there exist today that pictures Simeon? Not a single one. Now, not a nation here that pictures Levi. Not a single. However, when it comes to Moses, he says something different. Quite differently. So my question isn't so much of what Moses says, but why did Jacob see these things and what was he talking about? I'll tell you, once again, this is my dilemma. It's unclear. It's unclear to me. Some of you, it's very clear. Great. But to me, I can't put myself together and say, wow, if Joseph is a picture of an end time prophecy of the most powerful nation on the face of this earth, when the Messiah returns, who is that going to be? Well, it's got to be us, right? Although we've been humiliated around the world because we have not won a war since World War II. We lost the Korean War. We lost the Vietnam War. We lost the war in Iraq. We're losing the war in Afghanistan. Well, that's a good, successful story, isn't it? We entered in World War I and World War II. What else you got to boast about? Okay, so it doesn't really fit. I think it fits a picture because it says, Almighty God, it is His hand that is involved with every one of these tribes. Whether we like it or not, whether He judges them firmly or gently, whether He praises them or just says mediocre things about them. Oh, they talk wonderfully. They're beautiful words, you know. They sing an awful lot and they talk wonderful things and just inspiring people. I'm not saying that's contrary, but I don't see a nation existing today. I see people can do that. I can see people being cruel, inhumane. They don't have to be, quote, messianic in their thinking. That's not the issue here. This is not talk about the messianic people of the house of Israel. It's talking about the tribes of Israel. Does that make myself clear? Two different pictures. There's no comparison. Do I kind of answered your question a little bit there?
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of talking past each other. Not just for me at all. You're narrowing the argument, Richard, of what's here in Genesis 49.
Oh, right.
Whereas, you know, we can look elsewhere in the scriptures, the many prophecies about Ephraim, and on, the judgments. So, you know, there's lots of information that draws.
But see, that's a different time. That's a different, quote, in time. Yes. It doesn't fit here. And we in our modern world try to move that word in time in the 24th chapter of Genesis to be equal with our end time. Why? It had nothing to do with us. Yes.
Question is, okay, so when Abraham blessed his son Isaac and,
right,
you know, we see, is it just a Christian view, we see the world after, you know, Isaac is over with, and we see the nations of the world in that blessing that Abraham gives. Yeah. So if God did it that way with Abraham's blessing over his son, and Isaac did it over his sons, then why wouldn't Jacob's blessings also?
He did. Right there in the book of right there we just read about Joseph. The blessings of my father, the blessings of your father are on your head, on your crown. You have them. Oh, no, that's a different situation. There's two different things. One is the blessings of the land, the blessings of the sea, blessings of the waters, blessings of the abundance, blessings of food, blessings of wealth, blessings of this. Not the other one that has to do with the Messiah or the seed.